Good evening. We have Chris with us tonight, which is a special treat. Doesn't happen very often. And I'm not sure, do you know Bob and Kisayo? Chris is an old friend, one of the founders of GCOG. She's been around for as long as I have.
Slog through the grasses together.
Yeah. So we're studying what Chogyam Trungpa calls training the mind and cultivating loving kindness. So the main thing is the loving kindness part. But the only way to get there is to actually intend to do it. It is always easy to think of the hearts and flowers kind of loving kindness. That, of course, we know all about that. We know about love. But really asking the question about what that is, what love itself is, how that happens. Is it happening in us, between us? Is it some sort of physical, neurological impulse that sways us? I think this is a very interesting question to pursue. What is love? In our culture, we make a big deal about love, but I think we seldom really understand what it means. So we've come to the part where it's just challenging us to bring up the paramita of energy. Which is the next one. But we've been looking at whatever you meet unexpectedly, join with meditation. In other words, whatever comes up, put on your Zazen mind, or already have a Zazen mind, the big mind, rather than the small self-involved one. Whatever we meet, whether it's disaster or great joy, that he says, whatever comes up is not a sudden threat or is an encouragement or any of that bullshit. Instead, it simply goes along with one's discipline, one's awareness of compassion. So it's staying awake. Staying awake to what comes up, whatever comes up. And as the Dalai Lama says, being kind. So I wonder if you've thought about this week, and if whatever has come up is something worth sharing. Wendy?
I think we moved on to the fourth principle. Practice the five strengths.
We did go on to those?
Yeah.
Well, that's good, because that's the next one about energy.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
That's what I did.
I think you're right. I think we talked about
the other one last week. Okay. So then what this one is the five... the paramita of exertion. And actually, that's what I mostly have notes on. Without exertion, you cannot journey on the path at all. So there are five things: strong determination, to maintain compassion all the time, which is the very last thing that we were doing. Whatever comes up, just determined to be holding a compassion and wise mind. Then to familiarization is the second one, so that when you face whatever comes up, you get used to it. You get used to facing things as they are, rather than running away from them, turning away. And it takes a kind of habituation, because our habit from the very beginning is to turn away or to run away. And so this is pointing us back to saying, well, stay put. Get used to it. Become familiar with it. The third one is about seeds. It's staying true to our practice. He calls it a spiritual practice or a practice of devotion, to actually maintain some true conscious ways of holding our practice and enacting it, embodying it, as we go through our life. The fourth one is to reproach the ego. I love that. Reproach the ego and cut it away. Just tell it it doesn't have any place in this dynamic at all. The self consciousness, the self concentration, the self that's the greatest one of all, that one is fake. It's not real. And so this one is to remember and to practice with each one, that each person that we meet and each thing that we meet, as an opportunity to realize that we're not the best, we're not the most, we're not the only, that there's a whole world of us. And the last one is it's really about prayer. And seeing how we misbehave with abhorrence. That's a kind of vivid word. I'm not sure that's so good for us in our culture. We often are so hard on ourselves that we send ourselves off the track in another way. But in this case, it's about seeing that our self-grasping is creating our misery. Seeing that so clearly that we let go. Just let go. And so resolve to be ready, to go. And as we'll see, all of these apply to our mind as we're dying as well, which is the next one. So I'm not going to talk about that now, but as you have been thinking about this, you can start applying it to the whole notion of our dying. And that it's guidelines for the things to rely on as we live and as we die, relying on Dharma, on word meanings and not the superficial words, on the reality of how things are rather than our own fantasies about it. Intuitive wisdom, not conventional wisdom, not what the newspapers say. Developing our personal meaning. So these are also teachings for death and life, as they're spelled out in this training of the mind. And they're both under, it's just these two chapters under the one of effort, the paramita of effort. So you can see it takes a tremendous amount of effort to stay alive and stay awake. And it even takes effort to die. To die in some kind of authentic state of mind without fear. And it's said many times through here that these practices bring nothing but joy. It's so counterintuitive to how we grow up, thinking what we can get that makes us happy will make us happy forever. Oh, if I can only have that ice cream cone, I know I'll be happy forever. I used to think when I was six. but that kind of happy isn't even real. It's pleasure. But joy comes from absolving ourselves of the notion of ourself, freeing ourselves of being enslaved to this imaginary self that we carry around, this persona, this mask. We say, oh, this is me. So yes, I hope you have thought about this some. It's a lot. And I said it was a lot last week and said we should choose one. So maybe you've chosen one of them. He says, the idea is waking up to basic goodness, realizing that you're in the right spot and in the right practice. So there is a sense of joy and strong determination, which is the first strength. So what do you think?
Yeah, I focused on the joy talk too. Waking up each day with expectation. And then getting ready to come tonight, I had to change my shirt from bright green to navy blue. Trying to think, you know, how is joy expressed in the form of Zen? I mean, the colors are so somber.
Oh, I see.
A lot of the rituals are kind of low-key. I don't know if I want to walk into the Zendo and see a gold statue of Buddha, but, you know, I do like those orange and red robes.
Well, I think a lot of it is cultural, of course. The Tibetans are obviously not that way at all. And even the Zen, so-called Chan Zen combination in Vietnam isn't all, well, they wear gray mostly and little brighter colors. I think that's, in the Japanese way, is a way of avoiding distraction and avoiding the way kids in some schools are made to wear uniforms, because then they can't separate themselves from each other. They can't lord themselves over each other according to what they're wearing. Everybody's wearing the same, and it's all the same dark color, so you're not distracted and encouraged to think about yourself with all the little things that come with, you know, I'm the best, I have the best clothes, or I'm the tallest or the smartest or any of those things. If you disappear into a black robe, you're nobody. And that's where, once you're nobody, there's plenty of room for compassion. Before you're nobody, there's so many things getting in the way of it. So practice is about trying to make room for our wisdom and compassion.
What about bright flowers at the altar?
We're offering those. We're offering them.
We can offer bright flowers.
Yes.
Altar.
Yes.
Have bright color.
Mm-hmm. Offer them to Buddha. Yeah. Beauty is very encouraging because it's not personal. Beauty is a very big help in practice. And I think sometimes people don't realize that and think we have to be very grim and austere and, you know, not appreciate anything, and it's not like that at all. It's a tremendous amount of beauty and wonder in the world. It's about opening to that and forgetting about ourselves and all our worries and concerns, which mostly are immaterial. They really don't, you know, once an emergency comes up, all those things fall away right away. You know, they just do. Once you're in the ambulance going on to the hospital, you know, you're not concerned about any of those things anymore. You're just drop away. But we don't wish to drop away in that way, but just to stay present with the reality of the beauty of the world. And that's tremendous joy. Once we allow it, we just have to give permission. Sonia?
I just feel that those things, or whatever you want to call them, guidelines, bright colors next to you that are distracting maybe when you're sitting, and what to wear and the robes and the doing it this way and that way. It just seems like hopefully it would come from within us to know that they're just helping us rather than I have to do them.
Oh, absolutely. And there's no have to in it.
Right. And it just seems that it does, you know, when you're still and calm, the order by itself comes up.
Mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
But I still have questions about, I know that's probably not what we're talking about, but the robes and the wearing of the robes and how, what they mean to you and the raucous views. I know we've talked about that before, since you brought the form and that.
Yeah, it's another way of, another kind of recognition. The way a wedding is a recognition relationship. That what we do is all about relationship. That's what compassion and wisdom are about, how we can be with others. And if we actually take this seriously, this practice, in these terms, you could say, or in some kind of serious terms, then it's a way of confirming the intention with everybody.
Everybody,
well, to begin with, but it stands for the commitment that you have to everything.
So kind of like wearing a ring, I'm married to Rodney.
Yeah.
Having a wedding.
It's kind of like a wedding. It's wedding yourself to everything. It doesn't take away your wedding to your husband. It just incorporates that with everything.
You would know the difference because you always wear your robes. I just wonder what's it like not to wear them.
I don't wear them at home.
Right.
But in the Zendo I do. And it's out of respect for the vows I've taken.
And that's, you know? Because somebody told you that, or you felt that way, versus the Tibetans that are in the airport wearing their robes versus you just wearing them in the Zendo. You know,
that's the custom.
That's those things kind of sink in us because we love our teacher and we respect her, and he or she says it's a good idea to do them. Therefore, when I put them on, it feels that way rather than it comes on its own.
Oh, it comes on its own, and the teacher recognizes it. I mean, if you want to wear robes, it's probably not a good idea. If somebody comes into the teacher and says, oh, I want to be a priest, usually the teacher will say, well, wait a while.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's not like I want to practice the piano. Practice?
Well,
good?
Practice is good. Practice is very good. But wanting, thinking about getting something isn't what it is. It's losing something. Or having lost something and having seen what you see, having seen a new way.
I mean, I'm always moved by the ceremony. It's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I never thought I would enjoy it, but it just, like. Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, all those questions keep coming back. Why?
Yeah.
Why do you think for me?
Chris?
Oh, gosh, this question's been on my mind. And we're diverging from the subject, but when you go to the Zendo in the morning and you sit for a whole period, and then you put your kusu on your head, and then you put it on, it feels like I want to enter the Zendo with it on. And I think when I was at Tassajara recently, they just have one sitting, they don't wear their rakusu, and then after the sitting they put it on for the ceremony. It just feels like when I enter the Zendo,
you're there already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it matters.
It doesn't.
Feel that way, you know.
No, it doesn't matter.
You step in there with it on. You know?
Well, it's cultural. It's a custom. Mm. And usually people do what the custom is in the country you're in or the place where you're in. But there's no rule that says you absolutely that you'll be struck by lightning if you wear your sarva. No. It's, so that's lovely. We should all be feeling that.
Yeah.
In the mind before we walk in.
Yeah. And you just don't want to disrupt people's sense of order, but...
Yeah.
You know, just...
Yeah. Well, you have your own sense of order, your own deep response to the practice. So you can compromise or not. To talk a little bit about practice period. This is the beginning of practice period tonight, right here, right now. And it'll last for 6 weeks. And Wendy put already in the notes and on the email the suggestions that come up every year about what can be done to amp up our practice. The many different possibilities that we can choose to add a little extra to our understanding and our devotion to practice, making time for more sitting, making time for maybe more study, memorizing the Prajnaparamita Ridaya Sutra, or the Sandokai. There's a number of things. I saw Marie yesterday. She came by and wanted to talk about practice period because she had to be gone today. And she's already been thinking about it a lot, about choosing a subject more or less based on this, but based especially on the 12-fold path, the big circle of life that starts with ignorance or the beginning that ignites ignorance and then carries us all the way through to awakening, to being a body and a mind, all the way through to old age and death. And it's an ancient understanding of how things are. It's human life all spelled out in this sort of painful way. And it's all being held in the mouth of a big black creature who is called time. And there's a little Buddha up in the corner. And then there's a greed, anger, and ignorance in the middle of the circle. And they're what turns this thing. So turning and turning with greed, hatred, and delusion. Greed, anger, and hatred. And delusion. So that's a meaty subject. And So I would encourage you all to find a meaty subject. It wouldn't have to be like that at all. Wendy says, thank goodness. But this is an opportunity, and I hope that we can, through the weeks, take 5 minutes or so to share a little bit of our progress with each other and just encourage each other to carry on. I think that will be helpful also.